president should fear public scrutiny of his program. For from that scrutiny comes understanding, and from that understanding comes support or opposition, and both are necessary. I am not asking your newspapers to support an administration, but I am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people.
Becoming politically active has got to be one of the most satisfying and frustrating things that I have ever done. As a person who is always out front with his opinions here on the show, in social circles, which, by the way, I'm a blast at parties, I come under a fair amount of scrutiny sometimes, and I should, because the things that I'm saying sound like they're coming from an informed person. And when I'm challenged, I should be able to demonstrate that I am an informed person. I hear a lot of talking points, especially from family members of mine, conservative family members of mine. And they'll say things like, there's too much government regulation. Well, can you tell me where there is too much consumer protection? And by the way, I'm not going to use your frame. I'm going to use my frame, because regulations are consumer protection. So can you tell me of a consumer protection that you think needs to be brought down?
Well, there's just too much of it. There's too many of them.
Fine. Fair enough. Can you name one? Can you name one that you don't like? And I find that kind of challenge ends up in a brick wall. And that person usually begins criticizing me, getting angry at me. Who the hell am I? Right? Where do I get my information from? If you are going to put yourself out there, if you are going to get out front, and if you are going to express a strong political opinion, you should be ready for the blowback associated with it. And I'm not talking about the worthless conversations that happen on social media. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode 194. What up, though? Melvin, glad to be here with you. Let's get into it.
I have complete confidence in the response and dedication of our citizens whenever they are fully informed. I not only could not stifle controversy among your readers, I welcome it. This administration intends to be candid about its errors. For as a wise man once said, an error doesn't become a mistake until you refuse to correct it. We intend to accept full responsibility for our errors, and we expect you to point them out when we miss them.
I am ready for the criticism, and I get it all the time, and I'm completely okay with it because I can hold my own. But then again, I am a grown-up. I bring this to you today because it appears that the President of the United States is completely unable and or unwilling to weather the criticism that is being hurled at him. If he has some ideas and he would like to see those ideas implemented, what he should do is take his case to the American people. And he should be ready for the questions that are going to come from it. Instead, what we have are a handful of D.C. journalists that are sitting in jail right now for merely covering the Women's March. What we have is the Trump administration saying that they are going to stop talking to certain outlets, that CNN, no more. CNN is now fake news because CNN isn't pushing the Trump agenda. Sean Spicer recently said that he's going to give an interview, a full one-on-one interview to a news outlet. I think that's mighty big of him. All right, Mr. Spicer, who are you going to be giving your interview to? Breitbart. You may as well be giving it to the Daily Stormer. You're giving it to a white supremacist website. You guys aren't really trying to run away from this white supremacist thing too strongly, are you? Just before the inauguration of Trump, words I never thought I'd have to say into this microphone. I know I've said them before. We're into this 3 weeks, and it gets more and more unbelievable every day, if that's possible. But just before the inauguration, Kyle Pope over at the Columbia Journalism Review decided, CGA.org, decided to write an open letter to the incoming president, knowing that he has no intention of keeping any kind of relationship with the press. It goes, and I'm just going to give you select parts. Dear Mr. President, it will come as no surprise to you that we see this relationship, meaning the relationship between him and the media, strained. You've, quoting here, you've taken to Twitter to taunt and threaten individual reporters and encouraged your reporters to do the same. You've advocated for looser libel laws and threatened numerous lawsuits for your own, none of which has materialized. You've avoided the press when you could, and flouted the norms of poor reporting and regular press conferences. You've ridiculed a reporter who wrote something that you didn't like because he has a disability. While the Constitution protects the freedom of the press, it doesn't dictate how the president must honor that. Regular press conferences, he concedes, aren't enshrined in the document. So this is the plan for the media from here on out for the rest of this administration. For this President Snowflake, access is preferable, but not critical. Some of the best reporting during the campaign, still quoting here, came from news organizations that were banned from your rallies. Off the record and other ground rules are ours, not yours to set. We may agree to speak to some of your officials off the record, or we may not. That is our choice. We may decide how much airtime to give your spokespeople and surrogates. We will strive to get your point of view across, even if you seek to shut us down. But that does not mean we are required to turn our airwaves or column inches over to people who repeatedly distort and bend the truth. We believe that there is an objective truth, and we will hold you to that. When you or your surrogates say or tweet something that is demonstrably wrong, we will say so repeatedly. Facts are what we do, and we have no obligation to repeat false assertions. On the side here, this is before the whole alternative facts thing, the thing that Kellyanne Conway said. Going on, we will obsess over the details of the government. You and your staff sit in the White House, but the American government is a sprawling thing. The result will be that while you may seek to control what comes out of the West Wing, we'll have the upper hand in covering how your policies are carried out. We will set higher standards for ourselves than ever before. We credit you with highlighting, and this is where they concede a little bit, with highlighting serious and widespread distrust in the media across the political spectrum. Your campaign tapped into that, and it was a bracing wake-up call for all of us. We have to regain that trust. And we'll do it through accurate, fearless reporting, by acknowledging our errors and abiding by the most stringent ethical standards that we set for ourselves. We're going to work together. You've tried to divide us and use reporters' deep competitive streaks to cause family fights, but those days are ending. We, and he closes, we are playing the long game. Best case scenario, you're going to be in this job for 8 years. We've been around since the founding of the Republic, and our role in this great democracy has been ratified and reinforced again and again. You've forced us to rethink the most fundamental questions about who we are and what we're here for. And for that, we're grateful. Enjoy your inauguration, the press corps.
Without debate, without criticism, no administration and no country can succeed, and no republic can survive. That is why the Athenian lawmaker Solon decreed it a crime for any citizen to shrink from controversy. And that is why our press was protected by the First Amendment, the only business in America specifically protected by the Constitution, not to emphasize the trivial and the sentimental, not to simply give the public what it wants, but to inform, to arouse, to reflect, to state our dangers and our opportunities, to indicate our crises and our choices, to lead, mold, educate, and sometimes even anger public opinion.
The press is the only industry mentioned in the Constitution. You cannot have an informed electorate if they are ignorant. As the old Thomas Jefferson saying goes, a democracy cannot be both ignorant and free. You hear, I'm playing these clips from John Kennedy, and there's a reason for that. Whenever I hear conservatives, they'll spend their days just going off on how much they hate liberals and how much they hate Democrats and everybody to the left is wrong. If you ask them, are there any folks on the left side of the political spectrum that you like? You will almost certainly hear, without fail, they will say John Kennedy. They'll go, yes, that's when the Democrats were a much better party.
That's where the... After that, the Democrats just went all wrong. It was gravy up until that point, but then it started sliding south after that.
Let's explore that for a little bit. So here's John Kennedy, someone that the right says that they're great with to prove that they don't hate everybody on the left. And he's saying, I welcome your criticism. Please, this is how we have a vibrant democracy. This is how we have an informed electorate. Bring to me your criticisms, and I will hear them, and I will consider them. And I'm not afraid, and I will not shrink from controversy. Cover me, please. I want to work with you, the press, to inform the public. This is a good strategy, and Trump should be doing this. But he hates the press, and he says he hates the press because they're dishonest. The problem isn't that they're dishonest. And everybody should be shaken to their core by this very thing. Not just progressives, but conservatives as well. Now, I understand that they've got their quiet little corners of the world where they go to hear only the information they want to hear and absolutely nothing else. And then they have no problem confronting me when they see me in the grocery store and telling me how absolutely upside down and inside out and wrong I am because my beliefs do not mesh with theirs. And I've had it happen before. And it's not from the show. Somebody picked me out in public. I wear ball caps. I wear cowboy boots. I wear pants that fit. I know, right? Crazy. Cut off sleeves. It's pretty country. Someone saw that and just assumed that I was a Trump voter. And then I opened my mouth and they about curled up in the fetal position right there in the grocery store. Don't do that. You're not going to win. You have no idea who I am. The DNC called me recently. I'm obviously on their donor list because I've given money in the past. And I wish I would have recorded the phone call. I've gotten so good at recording phone calls that I didn't do it this time. But let me tell you the way it went. DNC calls up and says, Melvin, we need to fight against Trump. Right, his administration, we need... But you know what? We need a gift. We need a contribution. And I go, oh, you need money. Oh, yes, we need money, Mr. Melvin. And I said, uh-huh. The Democratic Party would like my money. And they said, yes, please, we got to fight against the Trump administration. And I said, do you know these first four picks? And so this is before DeVos and Sessions got through. These first four picks got through not just with Republican votes, but also got through with Democratic votes. It doesn't seem to me like the Democratic Party is all that serious about fighting the Trump administration. And I said, look, ma'am, and I understand that you're just a volunteer making phone calls, and I'm not directing this at you, but I have to air my grievances right now at this point. I said, ma'am, I'm a progressive, and I could not warm up to a Republican if you cremated me with one of them. To which she lets out an uproarious laugh because Melvin is hilarious. And I said, but the Democratic Party is not going to be getting my money today. I said, I have been giving money to them for years, and they have been squandering it. And they've been squandering every opportunity that they have, and they've been kowtowing to the Republicans when they get scared. And I said, and that is not a party that I'm going to get behind. I said, I have given you guys money, and you have continued to lose elections. So I'm going to do something that is far more effective and far more economically sound. I am going to be calling up my senators, and they're going to know who the hell I am. I am going to be calling up my House member, though she's a Republican, and she's going to know who the hell I am. And if they don't like me, then I'm going to show up to their offices. They're going to hear me. And I said, that has turned out to be a way more effective strategy than giving the Democratic Party money. If in the future the party would like to get my money again, they will. But as long as they're continuing with this strategy, giving this man, this white nationalist, this snowflake what he wants, they ain't going to get a damn thing from me. They'll get a phone call. They'll get a fax. They'll get a visit. They'll get to see Melvin's pretty little face. But they're not getting any more money from me. And it's not for lack of resources. Oh, I got the money. I could give you the money right now. I could just take it, just stack it, and just throw it at you. But I'm not. Because that's not doing any good. I said, so you're going to hear from me. And when I see the Democrats acting like a progressive party, then, and only then, will they begin getting money from me again. You should have heard this poor lady on the other side of the line. It really was a lot of that. Wow. You don't know what you're getting into. I've got the look. I seem very unassuming. Maybe like I may not know much about politics at all. But as I reminded this lady, you didn't just call some name on a list. You called the activist of all activists. I live this stuff. I breathe this stuff. I dream about politics in my sleep. It's pathetic. I said, I am this stuff. And I said, and I'm paying attention to what these guys do. And I plan on fighting for the next 4 years, with or without the Democratic Party. Fearlessness, courage, progressive voices. This is what we need right now. I understand, ladies and gentlemen, things look bleak and it may look like we're not winning, but we can do this. There's a man occupying the White House right now who is afraid of criticism, who can't handle hearing bad news, who doesn't like the fact that people are against him. A very fragile, giant man baby in the White House. I know you don't realize it. We don't have the upper hand right now, but we are quickly gaining it. He didn't forge a good relationship with the press because he sees them as dishonest. No, the problem is that they're telling the truth. And if he wants to have a successful presidency, he needs to have some kind of a relationship with the press. He has decided to fire at them, figuratively. And the press has decided to return fire.
Means greater coverage and analysis of international news. For it is no longer far away and foreign, but close at hand and local. It means greater attention to improved understanding of the news, as well as improved transmission. And it means, finally, that government at all levels must meet its obligation to provide you with the fullest possible information outside the narrowest limits of national security. And so it is to the printing press, to the recorder of man's deeds, the keeper of his conscience, the courier of his news, that we look for strength and assistance, confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent.
That's what an adult sounds like, and that is what a grown-up sounds like.
If Trump were black, you would call him a thug. That's what you would call him. Any African-American going around bragging about sexual assault, every African-American would have to come on the air and apologize for the failure of black men. And
I also want to remind you of the double standard that we're dealing with respect to him. One of the most pressing things that I heard come out of conservative circles was, we can't have Hillary Clinton as president because Bill Clinton is a rapist, because Bill Clinton is guilty of sexual assault. And then this guy hits the trail and gets caught on tape bragging about sexual assault. And nah, it's cool. It's locker room talk, right? Right now, Melania is costing the country tens of millions of dollars a month because she is staying up in Trump Tower right now because she doesn't want to live in the White House. So it's costing not just in Secret Service, but in private, and public police, right? To keep her safe in Trump Tower. And she's in a freaking tower. Someone could fly a plane into it. So they got to watch the airspace around it. It's very expensive, but that's okay. Could you imagine if Michelle Obama were in a tower and costing us tens of millions of dollars a month for her protection because she didn't want to live in the White House? Can you imagine the outrage that would be coming from conservatives? They'd be demanding she cut the check her damn self. But it's cool because the white guy's got it.
In one of his first acts as president, President Trump made it harder for Americans to afford a mortgage. Working class Americans, struggling Americans, now it's harder for them to get a mortgage. What did he do? He reversed a recent decision by the Department of Housing and Urban Development to reduce annual insurance premiums that many borrowers pay, saving new homeowners an average of $500 per year. What a terrible thing to do to homeowners. It took only an hour after his positive words on the inaugural platform for his actions to ring hollow, for his words to ring hollow. And actions speak louder than words. 1 hour after talking about helping working people and ending the cabal in Washington that hurts people, he signs a regulation that makes it more expensive for new homeowners to buy mortgages.
It took him 1 hour to say screw you to the people that voted for him. So he hates the people that voted for him. He hates the people that did not vote for him. He hates the press, and he's afraid of everything. Ladies and gentlemen, we are dealing with an authoritarian regime. And at this point, one outlet, and I imagine there will be others soon enough, But one outlet has decided that they are going to start covering him like what they see, which is an authoritarian regime. The Reuters news agency, quoting here, recognized the challenges of covering Trump's presidency by comparing it to authoritarian regimes like Egypt, Yemen, and China. Quote, it's not every day that a U.S. president calls journalists among the most dishonest human beings on the earth, or that his chief strategist dubs the media the opposition party, according to Reuters editor-in-chief Steve Adler. It's hardly surprising that the air is thick with questions and theories about how to cover the new administration. He cited the organization's work in Turkey, the Philippines, Egypt, Iraq, Yemen, Thailand, China, Zimbabwe, and Russia as an example of how to report on the Trump administration. Adler said that reporters could use experience learned in nations where we sometimes encounter some combination of censorship, legal prosecution, visa denials, and even physical threats to our journalists. Among other advice, the news agency pointed out that reporters should give up on handouts and worry less about official access. They were never all that valuable anyway, he points out. Our coverage of Iran has been outstanding and we have virtually no access. What we have are sources. The letter encouraged reporters to never be intimidated by the administration. Don't vent publicly about what might understandably be day-to-day frustration. In countless other countries, we keep our own counsel so that we can do our own reporting without being suspected of personal animus. We need to do that in the U.S. too, his message to reporters said. Don't take too dark a view of the reporting environment. It's an opportunity for us to practice the skills we've learned in much tougher places around the world and to lead by example, and therefore to provide the freshest, most useful, and most illuminating information and insight of any news organization out there.
And the crime and the gangs and the drugs that have stolen too many lives and robbed our country of so much unrealized potential. This American carnage stops right here and stops right now.
Authoritarian regimes are also, they're also really good at pushing the narrative that everything is going wrong, there's fire raining from the sky and everybody's gonna die. Right? The crime is he says this. Crime is the highest it's been in 47 years. Actually, it's been precipitously dropping. There was a little bit of an uptick in 2015, thanks to the fact that he was hopping so many people. I'm just guessing on that part. I don't think that that's the reason. It ticked up a teeny tiny bit, but it's not the highest. It's lower. Some of the lowest we have ever seen post-World War II. And this is an absolute lie. But that's an authoritarian regime for you. And I'm glad that there are good news sources out there, good outlets that will continue to be able to get the story and get the real story to us. The fact that this guy wants to shut down all media that's not friendly to him like an authoritarian, I'm glad that that's not going to hinder the kind of news that we're going to get, that we need to get over the next number of years. So what's Trump's next answer? Every day he does something insane into a microphone in front of a camera. But while he's doing that stuff with the one hand, the other hand is doing something shady, and it's doing it without a spotlight, and it's doing it without a camera, and it's doing it without a microphone. One of his first moves as president was to make it more expensive for first-time homebuyers to own a home. He doesn't care about you or your home ownership. And he also decided, perhaps realize, that he's not going to be able to shut down the press entirely. So what he would like to do is get rid of net neutrality. One of his first moves as president was the end of what we refer to as the open internet. Quoting here from Daily Kos, Trump has tapped net neutrality foe Ajit Pai to become chairman of the FCC, the agency responsible for enforcing and promulgating rules that assure an open internet. His appointment, like many federal appointments, will not require an initial Senate approval, so he just gets to get in. So here's what we're looking at. Ajit Pai used to work for Verizon. Verizon is a foe to net neutrality. So what is net neutrality? So if you want, and I'm going to try to use an example here. If you want to make a telephone call, right, and we used to have this line with local and long distance, but by and large, it was if you were going to call, say, a hospital, or you were going to call your friend, as long as it was, you know, local, and this is an imperfect analogy, obviously, then all these calls were treated the same. They didn't say if you want to call the hardware store, you want to call the newspaper, it's going to cost more. You made a phone call within this parameter, it was all treated the same. You want it to be long distance, you got to pay a little more for that. Okay, so to the internet. Everybody has access to the same internet. There are no fast and slow lanes on the internet. All traffic is treated the same. Now, if you want to have faster internet, yeah, you got to pay a little bit more for that, but all internet sites are treated the same. That's net neutrality. If you want to go to Comcast's website or if you want to go to Daily Kos, it's the same speed. If you want to go to the White House website or you want to go to Fox News' website, it's all treated the same. You know, if you want to go to Progressive Democrats, you see where I'm going with this. All the traffic is treated the same. So what would an end to the open internet mean? This is something that Comcast wants as well. Verizon wants it, Comcast wants it, and it's a means of controlling information. Recently in Canada, they made internet a right. They said internet is now a part of our daily lives. There's a ton of things you cannot do without it. So internet is now a right of all citizens. And we're going to find a way to get everybody connected. The Trump administration has said that they would like to have fast and slow lanes. And what do those fast and slow lanes mean? Well, we can only speculate at this point, but seeing how Trump and his whole administration would like to control the message that you see, it would seem to me like this. If you want to go to Huffington Post, well, that website is going to run a lot slower, unless that website wants to pay a lot more money. If that website loads at all, if you want to go to Fox News, you're going to get the fastest connection possible. If you want to go to Trump's website and buy some of the crap that has his name and face on it, well, no problem. But if you want to go to the DNC's website, well, that's going to load a little slower or may even cost you money. They could say if you want to go to political websites, you're going to have to pay more money. You want to go to news websites, well, that's going to be X amount more dollars a month. Oh, you want Netflix? Well, that's going to be X amount more dollars. So they're going to start treating all internet traffic not the same. And of course, the net effect of this will be controlling the information. And by the way, they don't really care that you want to watch, you know, Vikings and Ugly Betty or whatever the crap people are watching on TV right now. They want to control the information that you get. Trump gets a lot of his information from television. He gets a lot of his information from the internet. You'll hear him say it all the time. I saw on the internet. I heard an interview with Joe Arpaio the other day. You know, this right-wing crank. And he goes, I saw on the internet, and I was on the internet, and he went, oh, on the internet. But without giving specific sources, just saying the flat-out internet. So they realize that this is a way to get information. And if he can't completely shut down the press corps, if he can't completely shut down these outlets, he can slow the traffic to their websites because the FCC is in control of that. I often wonder, with this wall, when he talks about putting up this wall on the southern border to keep out the Mexicans, even though we've got almost net negative immigration into the country, especially from the south. But it doesn't matter. They want to throw up this wall anyway, right, for whatever reason. And I often wonder, are they trying to wall people out or are they trying to wall us in?
If the wall is the same size and the same numerical acumen that the president had on his numbers of folks who went to his inauguration, it'll be an 8-inch high wall, so we might be okay.
That is Governor Jay Inslee. That is my governor. Sometimes the only way you can respond to some of this stuff, is stark as it is with humor. And I think he makes a fair point. You know, the president makes these gigantic, glaring, glowing, huge, massive statements. But really, he's got nothing. And he most certainly has nothing as long as we're here. And as long as we're willing to put up the fight, right? And as long as we're willing to take that battle to them. And as long as we're going to be those progressive voices and we're going to be unafraid. And by the way, a man that wants to build a bunch of walls really is just afraid of the world around him.
Freedom has many difficulties, and democracy is not perfect. But we have never had to put a wall up to keep our people in, to prevent them from leaving us. An offense not only against history, but an offense against humanity. Separating families, dividing husbands and wives and brothers and sisters, and dividing a people who wish to be joined together.
We do, unfortunately, have a fair amount of what I'm referring to now as state-run news, which are the right-wing websites which are just going to absolutely fall in line with the Trump regime. And then, of course, there's Fox News. And I've sort of chided Fox News for years. I watch their coverage, I listen to their commentators, but I don't take them seriously as news. So to me, I'm getting the information that they're trying to get out to people, but I'm not absorbing it the same way, say, Jethro was absorbing it, right? I know that it's crap. But even though it's crap, it has a real-world effect, thanks to people that have, well, that have confirmation bias.
I think Trump is a more colorful character than some of the other Republican elected officials. But a lot of the story that he's telling is entirely consistent with what folks have been saying about me or the general story they've been telling about the economy for the last 7.5, the last 10, the last 20, the last 30 years. The basic story they tell is that the problems that the middle class, working families are experiencing has to do with a big bloated government that taxes the heck out of people and then gives that money to undeserving folk, 47% who are takers or, you know, whatever phrase they use, that businesses are being strangled by overregulation. You know, Obamacare has killed jobs. The fact of the matter is, when you look at it, the government as a proportion of our overall economy is actually smaller now under my presidency than it was under Ronald Reagan.
Let me read you something that Clinton said, though.
But let me finish. Right?
Okay.
We have fewer federal employees today. The health care costs since I signed Obamacare have actually gone up slower than they were before I signed it. 20 million more people have health insurance. So the arguments they're making just are not borne out by the facts. But what is true is that if people are feeling insecure, and they're offered a simple reason for how they can feel more secure, people are going to be tempted by it, particularly if they're hearing that same story over and over.
Even the administration and their lackeys realize that they're lying. They know they're lying. But even they're not willing to say, yeah, we're lying. So they've come up with this term, alternative facts.
Now, I am a member of the U.S. Senate Committee on the Environment. And in that capacity, I have talked to scientists all over this country and all over the world. Now, I recognize that all of the scientists who have studied this issue for decades are not quite as smart as Donald Trump. I got that. Because I know that Donald Trump, after years of intensive study, has concluded that there is no drought in California.
It's not my reality. It's not your reality, which, because our reality is real reality, right? The things that are really happening. But this is a real thing. And we have to recognize that it's out there. And we have to decide what we, the folks who live in reality, actual real reality, and it's weird I have to say that, we have to decide what we are going to do to battle the poorly educated.
I love the poorly educated.
Because even the administration has pointed out that no, facts are no longer a thing.
I hear half the media saying that these are lies. But on the other half, there are many people that go, no, it's true. And so one thing that has been interesting this entire campaign season to watch is that people that say facts are facts, they're not really facts. Everybody has a way of interpreting them to be the truth or not truth. There's no such thing, unfortunately, more of facts.
It may seem inconvenient, right? And it may be even annoying, but there's a much worse effect with respect to this than perhaps you imagine. These alternative facts, these people that don't live in reality, the things that they're carrying out in the name of achieving only what they want to believe, it's pretty heartbreaking. There was an article recently called by Barbara Demick at the New York Times, the headline, "In an Age of Alternative Facts, a Massacre of School Children is Called a Hoax." Quoting here, "Is there anything worse than losing a child? It is losing a child and having people taunt you over the loss. This is what happened to the family of Noah Ponzer, a 6-year-old, the youngest of 26 children and staff members gunned down in 2012 at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut. In the years since the massacre, the family has received hate-filled phone calls, violent emails from people who say that they know that the shooting was a hoax, photos of their son, some with pornographic or anti-Semitic content, have been distributed on websites. These outlandish theories, which hold that the Newtown school shooting was a staged mass murder engineered by gun control advocates, these folks have lived in the dark corners of the internet for years now. But with President Trump, they have gained fresh momentum. President Trump and his national security advisor, Michael T. Flynn, have been open enthusiasts of Alex Jones' InfoWars, a web-based radio and video network that has relentlessly pushed the theory that Sandy Hook was staged by Democrats to advance a gun control agenda. An unabashed Trump supporter during the campaign, Jones says he has received a personal call of thanks from the president-elect days after the election. Although Trump has not spoken publicly about Sandy Hook, many residents here say he is nurturing the culture of exaggeration and paranoia of which conspiracy theorists thrive. Oh, and by the way, Alex Jones is about to get a White House press pass. Let that sink in. The town of Newtown is drafting an official letter to the White House demanding that Trump sever his ties to Jones. Jones repeatedly tells his listeners and viewers that he has your ears and your respect. And he brags about how you called him after your victory in November. Emboldened by your victory, he continues to hurt the memories of the lost. The ability of those left behind to heal, reads an excerpt of the letter that the family has shared recently with the news media. Family members who lost children at Sandy Hook say they find themselves twice victimized. An unemployed waitress was arrested in December in Florida on charges of making death threats against Ponzer, who the father of Noah Ponzer, with repeated phone calls to his home, which she muttered ethnic and racial slurs. Another man in Rikers Island Prison in New York fighting transfer to Connecticut for a deluge of harassing police phone calls to the home and office of the medical examiner who signed the coroner reports for the Sandy Hook victims. At a memorial run in 2015 in honor of slain teacher Vicky Soto, a 33-year-old Brooklyn, New York man was arrested after police said he shoved a photo in the face of the victim's younger sister, Jillian Soto, and demanded to know whether her sister really died. Another man was convicted of stealing memorial signs erected in playgrounds to commemorate the dead children. He later called the children's parents to say that they shouldn't mind because their children never really existed. The morning that six-year-old Noah died, his father drove him and his twin sister to school. Noah that day was wearing a Batman shirt and sang along to his favorite song, which was Gangnam Style. Less than an hour later, he was shot in the face with such force that his jaw was blown off. The Sandy Hook truthers, as they called themselves, tormented not only the grieving families, but the teachers, police, photographers, first responders, neighbors, government officials, and witnesses they all say are a part of the ever-expanding conspiracy to fake the massacre. This was specifically a plot to steal America's weapons in order to neutralize its power. The chief perpetrators are powerful Zionists, declared one website a month after the massacre. Noah's father has gone into online forums where discussions of the massacre were happening and has shown them Noah's death certificate, the medical examiner's reports, his birth certificate, his kindergarten report card, and it didn't work. Nobody believed him. One man said to the still grieving father that he needs to dig up his dead son and show us the body. It's hard. It's tough. It's tough for me, you know, to not just give you this information, but to absorb this information, to read these stories. It's hard. I am a father. I am a father of young children, and I couldn't imagine, you know, not just losing a child, but losing a child and then having all these Alex Jones wingnuts, all these Trump supporters coming after you, telling you that you never had a child and that your child was not killed and that you're part of this political thing to take away everyone's guns. And I've said for a long time, and I know that the families of the children murdered in Sandy Hook have already been victimized and victimized again and again and again. And so my suggestion could be taken as victimizing them one more time. but they're already being victimized so much. I've said for a long time that we need to release the photos of these murdered children in their classroom. Think about that. Noah Ponzer, a bullet ripped through his face and tore his jaw off at 6 years old. I said, if people saw the photos, and I don't need to see them. I heard that children got murdered, and I live in the real world, and I believe facts, real, actual facts, so I don't need to see the photos. But for those of you that don't believe that it happened, or think that we don't need to do anything about gun control, about access for the mentally ill to get their hands on guns, and this in the wake of the United States House of Representatives voting to grant access to people, to grant access to guns for people who are severely mentally ill, even if they are unable to work because of their mental illness, even if they are on medication for their mental illness, being treated by a doctor for their mental illness, they are now allowed to get weapons again. So we begin the countdown. How close are we to the next Sandy Hook? How close are we to the next time that a room full of kindergartners or first graders or other young children are just mowed down because this has become official policy? Noah's father is named Lenny Ponzer, and he lives in a private hell because of the fake news, because of the conspiracy theorists, because of the people who refuse to believe reality. Right, the people who have their own worldview, the people who make up everything around them and don't believe any of the official stories, who don't believe their lying eyes. Lenny Ponzer lives in a private hell. It's true. He's not the only one. He's not the first. And he most certainly won't be the last if we don't find a way to get a grip on the fake stories, the fake information that's being put out there. And putting information out there that's unflattering to the administration or their lackeys is not fake. It's unflattering. It hurts their feelers. But it's not fake. What people believe, what these Sandy Hook truthers believe, that's fake. And it has a real world effect. They're not alternative facts. They're lies. And these lies are going to kill.
You did not answer the question of why the president asked the White House press secretary to come out in front of the podium and utter a falsehood. Why did he do that? It undermines the credibility of the entire White House press office
Don't be so overly dramatic about it, Chuck. What you're saying it's a falsehood, and they're giving Sean Spicer, our press secretary, gave alternative facts to that. But the point remains.
Alternative facts, four of the five facts he uttered. Zeke Miller, four of the five facts he uttered were just not true. Look, alternative facts are not facts.
Fake news stories circulated online during the campaign apparently prompted a North Carolina man to fire a rifle yesterday at a popular Washington, D.C. pizza place as he attempted to self-investigate a conspiracy theory that Hillary Clinton was running a child sex ring from there. Comet ping pong owner James Alefantis tells WJLA-TV.
I really hope that all of these people fanning the flames of this conspiracy would take a moment to contemplate what has gone on here today and maybe to stop.
Police say no one was hurt when Edgar Welch fired the rifle inside the restaurant with rounds possibly hitting the walls, a door, and a computer.
He did a military exercise. Pentagon does these periodically in Texas, and suddenly all the folks in Texas were all like, they're going to take over right now. I'm serious. And then the senator down there said, yeah, we better look into that. And the governor says, well, I don't know. What do you mean you don't know? What does that mean? Really? You think that, like, the entire Pentagon said, oh, really? You know, you want to declare martial law and take over Texas. Let's do it under the guise of routine training missions, and everybody's going to be. But they took it seriously. This is that in the swamp of crazy that has been fed over and over and over and over again.
Many of these students uneasy after this banner was put up inside their school. It says, build a wall, referencing Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump's plan for the U.S.-Mexico border.
Controversy tonight over a display from fans at a Northwest Indiana high school basketball game. Images and chants from the stands stirring claims of racism.
A small group of Elkhorn students chanted racial slurs and things like Donald Trump, build that wall, at players.
Fans have used the chant to blatantly target the minorities whose parents may be from other countries.
A Fairfax County mom says classmates told her third grader that when Donald Trump is president, her child will be deported.
Lately, it's been just getting worse.
Students don't feel safe. Students don't want to go to school anymore.
Things like Trump trying to intimidate us with the things that Mr. Trump has said that he's going to do with immigrants.
Honestly, disrespectful. That's how I take it. I hear it all on and off court everywhere I go.
This is our school, and this is where we learn. This is our environment. This is our second home. And it's not fair that some of us don't even feel safe coming.
That's an ad that's being run right now by MoveOn.org. And I want to point this out to you. I know it seems like things are bad, right? And it seems like they're going south and they're only getting worse. And I know it looks that way. But know this. We didn't turn out in this most recent election. A lot of people were just, I don't like Trump and I can't stomach Hillary, so I'm going to vote for the third party. Great, you don't care who wins the election, right? Or they didn't turn out at all. And then, of course, there was tons of voter suppression. And so Donald Trump has already registered to run again in 2020. He did it on Inauguration Day. He registered to run again in 2020. He plans on trying to carry this out for 8 full years. And as an incumbent, there's a fair chance that he might be able to do that. A lot of folks laughed at and protested Ronald Reagan during his first term as well. And when he won his second term, he won almost all 50 states. It was an absolute upside down and inside out blowout. No two ways about it. So the idea that perhaps, you know, because there's enough outrage, maybe we can just sit aside, let the other folks do it. We need you in this fight. We need you to call up your senator. We need you to call your House member. We need you to be a part of this. And by the way, the American people, they're on your side. So a recent PPP poll showed, quoting here, that more Americans have a favorable opinion of the women who marched during Trump's inaugural weekend, 50%, than they do of the new president, which is down somewhere in the 30s. Trump's disapproval rating is 50%. And that's historically high for a new president. Another finding in the polls that American people clearly are not buying the Trump administration's lies or alternative facts, that the president's inauguration was the largest in history. It wasn't historically large, and 62% of the American people have acknowledged that fact, according to the poll. A majority, 54%, concede that the women's march was much larger. Where things get particularly dicey is when the pollster surveying the Trump voters, he shows just how detached from reality they are. According to the poll, Trump loyalists say that their president's inauguration crowd was larger than the women's march, larger than Obama's. A small plurality of Trump voters even said that his inauguration had the biggest crowd in history. But I also want to point this out to you. Support for the women's march, support for people who are marching against the Trump administration, is at a majority of the country. The folks who see the Women's March and the anti-Trump groups as a positive thing, as something that they can get behind, that is a clear majority of people. The Tea Party, which, by the way, was not a large group of people. They were very effective in what they did, but they were very small considering what they were able to get done when they were able to hamstring a very popular president with a very popular agenda. But at their apex, they had maybe a 27% approval rating. A lot of people just saw them as the Klan without hoods. And it's true to a degree. And those people have come back around, and they are now the Klan's people that are supporting the Trump administration. So at their peak, they had about a 27% approval rating. The Women's March, the anti-Trump groups, they're already double that. You've got people out there. You got people out there that are with you. You got people out there that are willing to march with you and work with you and go up against a very unpopular president. According to the same poll, 59% of Americans want to see Trump's tax returns. 54% support enacting a law to require future candidates to release 5 years of tax returns. 61% feel the president should divest from his businesses. But this is not something that is merely going to happen on its own. This is not something that is just going to happen while you sit aside and watch. You have to become a part of this. And you have to understand what's already being done, whether or not you are involved. Quoting here from the Daily Coast, never in the history of the country have more people contacted their elected representatives than they have this week. And yet, Republicans stand, this is prior to the Betsy DeVos thing, at 50 votes for Betsy DeVos. Millions called their senators and said, don't vote for Betsy DeVos, right? So it was a 50-50 thing. Mike Pence had to come in and break it. Millions called their senators and said, don't vote for her. These folks are clearly not representing you because they went ahead and they broke the broke the 50-50 tie with Mike Pence and they got her in there. So they're not listening to you. Calls, emails, faxes, they're shattering records right now, right? There are real things happening that you can go out there and you can be a part of and you can have a real world effect. You don't just have to take this. Here in the state of Washington, there was a story printed recently by The Stranger about how all of the Republican representatives are on the run from their constituents, right? They're not taking phone calls and all the rest. I'll tell you what, I call my House member's office, and here's the way it went down. I signed up to get on her text list, which is where her office will text you when she's about to have a town hall. And then I call her office and I complain about, I'm not mean about it, very respectful. I mention what my issues are, where I'd like her to be on the issues, ask her why she's not there on the issues. And of course, I'm talking to congressional staffers. And so then she had a town hall in my town and I didn't hear about it. And then I finally put two and two together. They see your phone number and it goes into a database. And that database probably cross-references with their text club, right? The people that they're going to contact about having town halls. So they see me, my phone number coming up, complaining about how I don't like my representative, Jamie Herrera Butler, or what she's doing. And then they cross-reference it with the people that have signed up to come to their town halls. And then I don't hear about her town hall. I can say with absolute certainty that I was wiped off of that list to come to the town hall after I decided to call her office and she found out that I was not friendly to her. And now Republicans in Washington State are running from their constituents, not holding any town halls at all. The town halls that are being held, like with Jason Chaffetz in Utah, are absolutely upside down and inside out embarrassing. And if you're in America, by the way, you're one of our American listeners, if you're in America and you want to call your congressperson,
202-225-3121. Or 202-224-3121.
One more time.
202-225-3121 or 202-224-3121.
And what you do is you call. You give them your zip code. They will give you both of your senators and they will give you your House member and they will even patch you through if that's what you want. I want to finish up with this today. It's a post by Ben Malicote over on Facebook, and I don't generally get into these kind of things, but I found this to be particularly interesting. Quote here, you voted for Trump because Clinton was going to be in Wall Street's pocket. Trump wants to appeal Dodd-Frank, he's already began, and eliminate the fiduciary rule, which he's done, letting Wall Street return to its pre-2008 ways. And also, he's hired a bunch of people from Goldman Sachs. You voted for Trump because of Clinton's emails. The Trump administration is now running its own private email server. You voted for Trump because you thought the Clinton Foundation was pay for play. Trump has refused to wall off his businesses from his administration, and he personally profits from payments from foreign governments. You voted for Trump because Clinton's role in Benghazi. Trump ordered the Yemen raid without adequate intel and tweeted about fake news while Americans died as a result of his carelessness. You voted for Trump because Clinton didn't care about the little guy. Trump's cabinet is full of billionaires, and he took away your health insurance so that he could give them another multi-billion dollar break. You voted for Trump because he was going to build a wall and Mexico was going to pay for it, and American consumers are now going to have to pay for the wall. You voted for Trump because Clinton is going to get us into a war. Trump has provoked our enemies, alienated our allies, and given ISIS a decade's worth of recruiting material. You voted for Trump because Clinton didn't have the stamina to do the job. Trump hung up on the Australian Prime Minister during a 5 p.m. phone call because it was the end of a long day and he was tired and fatigue was setting in. You voted for Trump because foreign leaders wouldn't respect Clinton. Foreign leaders, both friendly and hostile, are openly mocking Trump. You voted for Trump because Clinton lies, and he tells it like it is. Trump and his administration lie with regularity and brazenness that can only be described as shocking. Let's be honest about what really happened. The reality is that you voted for Trump because you got conned. Trump is a grifter, and the American people were the mark. Now that you know the score, quit insisting that the con man is on your side.
There's never been a time when the American people within themselves, a large majority of them, are either terrified or something close to terrified. I'm struck by how many people I meet who say, listen, are you terrified about this time? My answer is no. Mm-hmm. I'm determined, but I'm not terrified, because being terrified is not really in the American character.
I know that it looks bleak, and I say this all the time, but trust me, we've got the folks on our side. The more effective thing to do would have been to turn out for the freaking election. But trust me, 2018, and you don't just get to sit there on the couch, sit there on the bus, your earphones in, listening to me talk. It's not enough to merely absorb the information. You have to put it into action. You have to do something with it. And although you don't see me, understand this, that I am there with you. I am marching with you. I am part of the same resistance that you're a part of. And if you're one of our listeners from outside the country, I want to tell you, from my perspective, yeah, things look a little bad. And we look goofy. And we look dumb because we put this giant man baby in office. But Americans are smart. And Americans are thoughtful. And Americans do believe in the idea of my brother's keeper. You know, looking out for our neighbors and any and all the rest. Time to time in history, we elect these leaders because of our faulty democracy. And democracy is an imperfect thing. But there are plenty of good people within this country. Me, people that listen to this show, my neighbors, even if they voted for Trump, they're about to get themselves an education. There are a lot of good people here. And we'll survive this like we've survived these things in the past. We've gotten to a point in our country where the White House was almost burned completely to the ground and was invaded. We've been through worse, and we'll get through this too. But it's not going to happen without you across the world to continue protesting, and you within the borders of the United States to get involved. Join your local Democratic and Republican parties. Call your congressmen. Call your senators. You can't call the White House anymore because they shut down the White House, the White House comment line. But it's up to you, and it's not going to happen without you. Thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tficpo.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tficpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or at the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes Store or on Podbean. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out there. You can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, hate mail, or just a general statement or inquiry, you can email us at tficpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base, so feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are The Fire You Can't Put Out, and we will prevail. Rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and a special thanks to you for listening. This is Melvin, signing off. And now that I've woken you up, good morning.